This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. March is Women's History Month, dedicated to honoring the countless women who've made a difference in their communities, their countries, and the world throughout history. Today, we're going to take a dual-track approach. With our guests, we'll focus on the life and work of three notable women with strong connections to Illinois, Ida B. Wells, Betty Friedan, and Lorraine Sade Baskerville. And we'll also share listener comments about their suggestions of notable Illinois women. That's the other track, some already famous, some not. Ida B. Wells was a journalist, a leader in the civil rights movement, and co-founder of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP. To talk about her life, we are joined by Michelle Duster, Ida B. Wells' great-granddaughter and author of the book Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life of Ida B. Wells. Betty Friedan was born in Peoria. She was an activist and a leading figure during the women's rights movement in the 1960s and 70s. And joining us to talk about her life and legacy is Christine Nunez, who is the current president of the National Organization for Women. And lastly, Lorraine Sade Baskerville is a Chicago social worker and activist known for founding the transgender advocacy group Transgenesis. We're joined by librarian and archivist and volunteer at Gerber Hart Library and Archives, Erin Bell. Erin is working on an upcoming podcast with an episode featuring the life of Lorraine. Thank you all so much for being here. Listeners, we want to invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or comment on one of the specific women we're talking about, or if there's another woman from Illinois history that you want to share with your fellow 21st listeners, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Michelle Duster, I'm going to begin with you. You are the great-granddaughter of Ida B. Wells, and as I mentioned, you recently wrote the book, Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. Who was Ida B. Wells?
Well, thanks for having me on the show. My great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, was born into slavery in 1862 in Holly Springs, Mississippi, and she went on to become a pioneering data journalist, a civil rights activist, a suffragist, a social worker. As you mentioned, she was the co-founder of the NAACP. She was involved in the suffrage movement and founded the Alpha Suffrage Club in Chicago. And she also did a lot of work on a local level in Chicago with the Negro Fellowship League.
I love that you say she was a data journalist. That's not typically a term we hear applied to people in the late 1800s. Can you talk a little bit more about her work in journalism?
Right. Well, she was chronicling the realities regarding lynching. And so what she did that was so pioneering at that time was to collect information on names, dates, locations, and the specifics that were around the lynchings that took place. And to put into context of today, it was pretty much along the lines of the say her name hashtag. And so today we know, because of the work that she did, the exact names of the victims of lynchings, which is really important. What she was doing was countering false narratives and putting names and faces to the statistics.
And aside from the obvious family connections, what drew you most to wanting to write about your great-grandmother?
I think overall, the stories of women in general and African-American women specifically are greatly undertold and represented in our country's historical landscape. And so I feel it's very important for the work that my great-grandmother did, her contemporaries, people who came before and after her, to be more well-known and celebrated.
Okay, I want to bring Christian Nunez into the conversation now. Betty Friedan was the co-founder of the National Organization for Women. Can you tell us about her activism?
Sure. Well, thank you for having me. Betty Friedan is one of the co-founders of NOW, and she has just been the groundbreaking work of the mother of the modern women's rights movement. And we just celebrated her 100th birthday in a celebration of her life. But she really was more than just an author and journalist and activist. She helped launch NOW in June of 1966 at the Third National Conference on Commission of the Status of Women. And they're, they launched now because of the lack of true inclusion of women's voices and realized that women needed their own platform. And it was during the time of civil rights movement when there was sought out for a parallel of really trying to demand equal treatment for both sexes. One of the things that really brought forth this right of now was the fact of the segregation of women and men's help wanted ads in the newspaper. And so this is one of the main things that really brought forth the development now when a bunch of women, Betty Friedan, other leaders that we know about got together and just scribbled down what they wanted for a women's movement that was inclusive and demanded a women's equality. And the National Organization for Women came from that movement. And Betty Friedan also was very instrumental in leading one of the largest organized women's actions called the Women's Strike on the Poor Equality ever in New York, where over 50,000 women got together and demanded equality. And so we know that she continues to live on through now for the contributions that she's made.
Fascinating. And I'm fascinated by the idea that the Help Wanted ads would have said, you know, the men's jobs, the women's jobs. And that's one of the things that sparked the National Organization for Women. Erin Bell, I want to bring you into the conversation as well. You're working on an upcoming Gerber Hart podcast that will launch this summer. One of the episodes is going to focus on Lorraine Sade Baskerville. Who was Lorraine Sade Baskerville? Who is Lorraine Sade Baskerville? I should say she's still with us.
Thank you so much for having me. So Gerber Hart, we have a collection of her materials from her time during the operation of Transgenesis, which ran from 1995 to 2003. She actually donated that to us before she left the country for Thailand. She is a Black transgender woman who was born and raised in Chicago. She experienced life from all angles as a Black woman, as a trans woman, as a sex worker, which led her to pursue a degree in social work in 1994, shortly before founding Transgenesis in 1995 with her husband. Transgenesis was an agency that tried to address the social concerns of marginalized people of the transgender community in Chicago. The ultimate goal of everything was self-empowerment through support workshops aimed at addressing gender identity, substance abuse, HIV, AIDS, sex work. She worked as an HIV counselor while she was in charge of Transgenesis.
And she worked out of Chicago and in Illinois for the most part. What do you know? What made her decide to? I mean, I've seen in interviews in the past, she decided she had to shut that down though at some point. And as you mentioned, she went to Thailand. What was that? What drove her to do that?
So unfortunately, she just found that she was having issues with support. It was hard running an organization. Ostensibly the first trans-led social services organization in Chicago in 1995. She and her husband at the time had to write all the grants themselves, and she was just constantly facing an uphill battle.
Okay, I want to at this point read a couple of the texts from listeners we got. We asked our texting group who they believe is a notable woman from Illinois that should be recognized, be it somebody already prominent in history or somebody from their family or community. Justin in Rockford said he wants to recognize the Fifth Ward Alderman of Loves Park, Illinois, A. Marie Holmes. He says she has long served her constituency as well as tended to the needs of those less fortunate. As a regular member of the Rotary Club, she's been a quiet and humble servant of the servants who has cultivated a reputation for speaking candidly, honestly, and sincerely. Also, Matt in Champaign says he wanted to recognize Champaign-Urbana Public Health District Administrator Julie Pride. He says she has been a force in the CU area, responding to questions and requests on social media, and she's been spotted leading by pitching in and doing while in the office. If you want to share one of your notable women in Illinois history, somebody you look up to, somebody you think should be more widely recognized, perhaps, you can join the conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. And Michelle, we need to take a break in, unfortunately, a little less than a minute. So briefly, can you talk about some of the dangers that Ida B. Wells faced in doing her journalism at the time she was doing it?
Right. Well, she was countering false narratives about the realities regarding lynching. And she, in Memphis, she encouraged people to boycott the streetcars, boycott white-owned businesses, and to leave Memphis if they could. And as a result of her advocating for Black people to exercise their economic strength, she also uncovered the realities of the fact that Black men were not necessarily violating white women. And as a result, her printing press was destroyed, her life was threatened, and she was exiled from the South.
Wow. Okay. We are going to continue this conversation after a short break. Again, if you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. More to come here on the 21st. Stay with us. This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. In recognition of Women's History Month, we are spending the rest of our show today talking about the lives and work of three notable Illinois women, Ida B. Wells, Betty Friedan, and Lorraine Sade Baskerville. We're also sharing some listener suggestions for women who they think should be or already are notable Illinois women. We also got text messages from for John in Elgin. He says he wants to remember Irish-American immigrant Mary Harris Jones, better known to many people, including a lot of magazine readers, as Mother Jones. She is buried beside Union Miners in Mount Olive, Illinois, was one of the most remarkable women to ever grace our state, John says. A union organizer around the turn of the last century, she was called the most dangerous woman in America and jailed many times for fighting for workers, including for child laborers and African Americans. And then also Samantha, who did not share her location, did want to recognize her daughter, Amy Bach, who has X-linked hypophosphatemia, which is a bone disorder. She says she's been through so much herself with her bone disorder, but is always helping others with other health issues. She's very caring and always helping someone. She's always doing this without any payment or acknowledgement. If you want to share a notable woman in your life in from Illinois history, 800-222-9455 is the number to call, 800-222-9455. Joining us for our conversation, continuing our conversation, are Michelle Duster, who has written the book. She is a great-granddaughter of Ida B. Wells and has written the book Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life and Legacy of Ida B. Wells. Erin Bell, who is a librarian and archivist working on an upcoming podcast with the Gerber Hart Library and Archives for an episode featuring Lorraine Sade Baskerville, who is a trans woman activist who did much of her work in Illinois. And also Christian Nunez is the president of the National Organization for Women and is talking about the legacy of Betty Friedan. And Christian, I want to return to you. Can you talk about The Feminine Mystique, the book? This is credited with sparking the second wave of American feminism. Can you talk about the effects of the book when it came out and how or whether it still resonates today?
Sure. You know, and I think you were pointing it out, you know, the feminine mystique really did kind of lay the framework of like the second wave of feminism for a lot of women and feminists. And I think it's really important to identify what that meant. Betty Friedan really spoke to the unspoken for a lot of women. She brought up thoughts that people were kind of afraid to say and thought were taboo to mention, like a sense of maybe of the wanting of to have more than just being at home and raising children and caring for the house. And so in this Feminine Mystique, she talked about that desire to want to be able to work and the want to be able to have control, bodily autonomy, the ability to pursue further education. And, you know, and in that time, those are things that women didn't really feel freely to discuss openly. And so that still resonates even today in 2021, right? Because we know women are still fighting for bodily autonomy. We know women are still fighting for equality, even in the workplace, to get equal pay. We still suffer and still experience a gender wage pay gap. And we know women are still even fighting to get education. And with COVID that just recently happened, you know, we're seeing women have lost majority of the jobs. So I think even with the feminine mystique, we're seeing how it still resonates even to this day and age. And there are points that we can still truly understand and relate to. So I think it's something that can be kind of like a starting place to really help women who identify as feminists or understand the feminist principles to really guide them in understanding that question of like, I can have women's equality and I don't have to give up one thing or the other in order to have it.
And Erin Bell, I want to ask you about Lorraine Sade Baskerville. You mentioned this, that there was an intersection of identities that she had, a Black woman, a trans woman, a sex worker. How did those intersections play a role in her work that they might not have if she did not have that particular combination of background?
So in addition to being an HIV counselor, she was extremely involved in numerous activist roles and positions within the city of Chicago. Some of the programs that Transgenesis conveyed for the people who went to who sought services there were TPAS, which is Trans People Advocating Safer Sex. She actually got to go to South Africa in 2000 to speak on behalf of the AIDS conference there. She held a workshop for transsexual health. And in addition, she's worked with, she was on the board for TPAN or Test Positive Aware Network, the Chicago HIV Prevention Planning Group, and the Chicago Police Department's 23rd District Gay and Lesbian Advisory Group. All of this is just, it defines who she is, and her whole core is just caring and striving to advocate for every aspect of her identity.
I want to go down to the phones at 800-222-9455. We have Kim is on the line from Kewaunee, Illinois. Kim, thanks for calling in.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Who did you want to nominate for the sort of Illinois Women's History Pantheon?
I am beyond proud of my daughter, Kate. She is an attorney. She is the first college graduate in our immediate family, and she majored in women and gender studies in college and took it on to a law career. And the previous person on here was talking about a good core, and that's what my daughter has, and I am beyond proud of her. She will say this is not acceptable, and she fights for that cause regardless if it's a popular opinion or not.
All right. Thank you, Kim, so much for calling in and sharing that. Do please call us again. And, you know, so many of these connections we've heard about from listeners are personal connections. And Michelle Duster, I wonder, you know, if you can, are there family stories about your great-grandmother, Ida B. Wells, that, you know, maybe people wouldn't read about in a museum that got passed down about her, what she was like as a person?
People ask me that all the time, and unfortunately, because my great-grandmother is a public figure, a historical figure that people have a lot of interest in, almost everything that our family knows is available in the public. So, I mean, there are stories about her, you know, where she refused to leave the ladies' car and go to the colored car in the Chesapeake, Ohio Southwestern Railroad incident, where she was forcibly removed because she refused to do so. I mean, that's a story that our family has shared many times, but it's also quite available in the public. You know, that's the reality of being related to a historical figure. Everything is in the public.
Yeah, fair enough. Fair enough. Maybe you can expound on that story, though. I that is one that I have to admit I'm not familiar with. She left the women's car to go to a car that was designated.
No, she was sitting in the ladies' coach, and on the train commuting to work between Memphis and Woodstock in 1883. And she was asked to leave the ladies' car in order to go to the colored car because the state of Tennessee had passed Jim Crow laws. And she refused to do that because she had been riding the car for many years without being disturbed. And she was forcibly removed by three. It took three men to remove her because she fought so hard. And she was so humiliated by that incident. And she had another situation a year later in 1884. And she decided to sue the railroad on the basis of the cars being separate and unequal when the law was supposedly separate but equal. She initially won that lawsuit in 1884, but then the railroad appealed it all the way to the Tennessee Supreme Court, and she ultimately, and it was ultimately overturned in 1887.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That's a fascinating story. I want to turn now back to Christian Nunez about Betty Friedan. I know this is going to be an impossible question, but Betty Friedan died in 2006. I wonder what you think, though, from what you know of her, what she might make of where the status of the women's movement is today, be it Me Too, to take it where you will.
Yeah, that's a definitely hard question to ask. I could only say, that her legacy and her thought process has evolved throughout the movement, and from where she started, I could just say that she started in the civil rights movement, and she started with the intention of providing a space for equality. And using that, I could only believe that she would be supportive of where we are now with continuing to fight for equality for all. And I know that, there has been different parts of her legacy and times where, we've tried to figure out where the movement has waves of feminism have gone, but her true vision has always been from an intersectional feminist perspective of race because race inequality and sex inequality, because it was founded with Black women and now it's founded with Black women as co-founders as well. And also just was trying to be able to bridge equality for women to be able to have the roles that they want. So I can only imagine that at this place that she would be willing to totally embrace that we all be in solidarity together. That's where I would feel that she would be.
No, that's a great answer. I appreciate that. And Michelle Duster, a similar question for you. You've already drawn the connections between the important work that Ida B. Wells was doing, documenting the underreported at the time lynching tragedies unfolding across America. And you've linked that to the Say Her Name movement. There's today, America has a national memorial for peace and justice. This is the Equal Justice Initiative has a, it's informally known as the memorial to lynching victims. I wonder what you think she would make of Black Lives Matter and where the movement for civil rights is today.
the way that Christian kind of answered the same question, I can only guess what my great-grandmother would think, considering the fact that she died 90 years ago. So we are living in a different time, a different place, with different technology, different issues. But considering what she did during her time, she spent her entire adult life fighting for freedom, justice, and equality. And so considering the fact that we are still fighting today, five generations after her, I think she would be happy to see that we have an African-American and South Asian woman as Vice President of the United States, considering that my great-grandmother was 58 years old before the 19th Amendment was passed. So she spent almost her entire life without that right to vote. But then at the same time, we have, you know, racially based inequality in so many areas of our society. And so we're still fighting. And that's one of the things that I included in my book was how people are continuing today in the tradition that my great grandmother had in fighting for some of the same issues that she was fighting for.
And unfortunately, we have less than a minute left. Erin Bell, I'm going to ask you a more fair, modified version of this question. The things that Lorraine Sade Baskerville, when she was an active activist in Illinois, in Chicago, that she was working on, people who are carrying that work forward today, what are they most focused on in just a few sentences, if you can?
So it's the work today is largely focused on changing the vocabulary, changing the language, changing the way that we think about people who have HIV/AIDS, or that we think about the trans community, or we think about Black trans women. It is the way that we put pronouns in our signatures at work. It is the way that we are constantly sharing stories and personal stories back and forth on social media. It is Black Lives Matter. All of this is Lorraine Sade's legacy, and it is the work that is being carried on today.
Great answer. I want to thank my guests so much for sharing the stories of Lorraine Sade Baskerville. We've heard about her from Erin Bell, who's a librarian and archivist and volunteer at the Gerber Hart Library and Archives. Stay tuned for a podcast on Lorraine Sade Baskerville later this year. Also, we've been speaking with Christian Nunez, who is president of the National Organization for Women, about Betty Friedan, and Michelle Duster, who is Ida B. Wells' great-granddaughter and author of Ida B. the Queen, The Extraordinary Life of Ida B. Wells. Thank you all so much for being here. This is The 21st.